From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 21st, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brewers start a 10-game homestand tonight at AmFam. Your Milwaukee Bucks playoff drive continues with the Miami Heat. The series is tied at one game apiece. And oh, nuts, it's National Chocolate Covered Cashew Day. I almost missed it. A Michigan man was charged with assault for allegedly hitting a clerk over the head with a frozen fish. The Macomb County prosecutor said, "I never thought I'd have to say this, but if you assault someone with a fish, you'll be prosecuted to the full extent of the law." What would he say if the fish had a gun? Here's a quiz. What's the number one drug illegally shipped into the U.S.? The answer is not opioids or fentanyl. It's Viagra. I suppose the upside to getting Viagra through the mail is no more embarrassing conversations with a pretty college co-ed who's working at Walgreens for the summer.
Ooh.
The next one may be the strangest story I've done in a while. A man who had prostate cancer developed an uncontrollable Irish accent. His doctor said it's the first known case of prostate cancer causing someone's accent to change. The patient, Mr. Bumgartner, who isn't Irish, would like an explanation. And finally, over the last weekend, someone in Philadelphia broke into a trailer and stole $200,000 in dimes. They left $500,000 in dimes behind. Apparently, they were too heavy. Can't you just wait till they try to buy something with all those dimes? You know, Baby Ruth candy bar, sure. Alexis, not so much. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Dave Sandstrom, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. I'm busy over here Googling how much 200,000 in dimes actually weighs. So maybe by the end of the show, I'll have an answer on that one. But a pretty just bland week overall. The NASDAQ down 0.4%, 51 points, closing at 1272. The S&P 500 down 0.1%. That's just 4 points, closing today at 4134. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.2%, down 77 points, despite a 22-point rally on Friday to close at the bell at 33809 for the year. NASDAQ up a pretty stellar 15.6%, including dividends. The S&P 500 up 8.2%. And the Dow, again, after that 22-point Friday, very, very exciting week overall. A lot of just really flat moves day to day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 2.6% for the year. You know what? I think as good a place as any to start, it feels like despite weakening economic news, a realization that the earnings forecasts that were already pretty weak were more or less spot on, that you know the data isn't any worse than expected, but more signs that things are slowing, and yet, you know, investors have mostly taken it in stride. I think not a lot of surprises, and as a result, the market really hasn't been bouncing around all that much.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise, as you allude to there, is how well the market's doing, despite all this bad or tepid news, or good news, if you're a company that forecasts earnings that were actually, they turned out high, they were forecasting lower earnings, and they beat their lousy earnings forecast. This is a spectacular year. It's not just a good year. When you're talking the S&P 500 halfway through the year, up over 8%. When you're talking the NASDAQ, up over 15%, not even halfway through the year. And then when you look at the Dow, up a mere 3% or less, you have to wonder, you know, what are people concerned about? You know, what's this thing we hear about maybe a recession? How bad is it going to be? And if the stock market's a leading indicator, why is it up, for God's sake?
You know, I think, Dave, it gets to what I think is a pretty critical point you and I were talking about earlier, and that is that there isn't a ton of over-optimism out there right now, plenty of things to be concerned about, and I think it feels like investors are feeling the weight of all of those.
Yeah, I mean, we've been beaten down pretty good, I would think, over the last 12 months on bad news, right? I mean, if it's not the war in Ukraine, it's concerns of a recession, it's concerns over China. I mean, you can name it, you know, every time you turn on the news, there's something else to really be fearful of. Yet, with all that being said, we're looking at some pretty strong economic situation going on here in the United States. The April PMI numbers have come out stronger than anticipated, both in manufacturing and in services, which signals growth if those numbers are over 50%. So, while, we have to, concede the fact that economic growth may be slowing, it's slowing globally for sure, it certainly isn't a dire situation by any stretch. The employment market continues to be very strong. So despite all the bad news, it doesn't give investors a lot of, real good confidence to jump in with both feet. Yet, that's that underlying strength of the economy, I think, is really what's holding things up.
Yeah, you mentioned the Purchasing Managers Indexes. There's global measures of that same number, and the global measures looked strong as well. And so one of the concerns that I think I've had is it's rare that the rest of the world brings the U.S. down with it, but it's quite typical for slowdowns here in the U.S. to impact the rest of the world. And so, keeping a close eye both on what happens here, but also on what happens globally, because the reality is American businesses very well exposed to consumers, not just here, but abroad. And if we're going to see a broad slowdown, I'm as concerned about what it means for the 40% or 50% of revenue for most S&P companies that comes outside the U.S. as I am here in the U.S. And so encouraging news, I think, on the labor front, encouraging news on some of the manufacturing fronts that at a minimum, the stagnation we've seen is stable. It's not continuing to weaken at an exponential rate, which I think would be a bit more concerning. And of course, Art, this gets to a question that you posed, that you've gotten from clients, which is, if we're largely long-term optimistic, but near-term maybe a little more cautious, and if valuations right now are as high as they are, about 18.3 times forward earnings, 12-month forward earnings, that's above average, why would we be looking at stocks right now? Aren't things a little expensive?
That, my friend, is a great question. The good news is we're not weather forecasters. We do not have to know what's going to happen tomorrow. We do know that over long periods of time, stocks do incredibly well. Over long periods of time, if you mix stocks and bonds together, you're going to make money over time. So all this, what's going to happen tomorrow, or what's the economy going to do, or is it going to slow, how much is it going to slow? And again, back to what I said before, with the stock market being a leading indicator, you get conflicts in the data. So even though we're constantly poring over the data, we have to know what's going on. We have to know what might happen, not to mention the debt ceiling crisis we could have if they don't raise the debt ceiling this time around. We're confident every day we go to work that over long periods of time we're going to be able to make money simply by staying invested. And then the nuances of what we do, a little bit of shifting from growth stocks to value stocks or value stocks to growth stocks, but never enough to move out of one or the other. Just the right amount that we think is appropriate at the time so that we have a nice, smooth ride, hopefully, going forward as we make money, hopefully, over years and decades. So we have to know what's going on. We have to know what the weather forecast is for the market. But we can't be concerned if we're wrong, from one day to another. So back to the question about stocks being too expensive, the earnings in the P.E. ratio could go up, and that's a something we don't control. And as we've said a few times on the show already, the Fed is trying, we've talked about the economy being weaker, but that's because the Fed's deliberately trying to weaken the economy. They don't want to kill the patient, but they want to make sure that the patient understands that we can't support higher inflation perpetually. So this could work out fine if we're patient, as long as we're confident that the doctor, here being the Fed, knows when to stop, applying the medication that's making the patient temporarily weaker.
Well, and let's touch on those earnings forecasts for a second, because we're in the midst of what is likely an earnings recession. The fourth quarter of 2022 saw negative year-over-year earnings growth. The first quarter likely to see a similar result, and potentially even second quarter this year. We won't know that until July, August, even into early fall before we have those numbers reported. But at least based on forecasts, that's the expectation. And so the forward-looking numbers right now, not only do they include stagnation, they actually include some decline in the forward 12-month forecasts. And as you get some of those declines off the books, and by the way we do that is we keep moving forward in time. You put another quarter in the books of earnings, And if it's a bad quarter, you take that off of your forward look and you add a quarter on the end that shows growth again. And that's the long-term forecast is getting back to earnings growth. All of a sudden, the earnings number starts to get bigger again. And so the formula, obviously, for price to earnings is you take the price of the S&P, you divide it by your expectation for earnings. It gives you some pretty simple math on what that PE number is. As I said, right now, about 18.3, yeah, it's 8, 10% higher than 25-year averages. By the way, I don't really think in terms of what it's supposed to be. I think in terms of range, it's well within the range of normal. Two-thirds of the time, the forward PE for the S&P 500 falls somewhere between, we'll call it 13.5 and 20, rough numbers. And we're well below kind of the typical range still. And so plenty of room, I think, there for optimism, even on the earnings front. Oh, by the way, when you compare it to the alternatives, yeah, bonds look better. And Dave, I know that's something you talk about quite a bit. You know, we used to say, well, the earnings yield on the S&P, the reciprocal of that price to earnings, 6, 6.5 back when stocks were cheap. Well, now it's 5.5. And it used to be that what you could get on bonds was 1.5 or 2. Well, what you can get on bonds now looks a little better too. So the math changes.
Yeah. And Kyle, I think what that's going to give us is some increased stability going forward in the markets, especially with a balanced portfolio. If you look back at what the zero interest rate world did to investors, was it created a situation where over the last 10 years, bond yields were incredibly low, well below their long-term average. The net return for the U.S. aggregate bond index was about 1.5% a year over that 10-year period. But it did push everybody into stocks. So the S&P moves all the way up to 13 plus for that same period of time. So balanced portfolio, you know, you did okay, but it was a wild ride. Now going forward, if we move those bond returns up higher than their normal or their long-term average, even with a reduced stock performance, the balanced portfolio gets you in the same place with a whole lot less volatility. So you got more yield coming from the bond side. I think it's going to bring us some more stability and really bring bonds back into that role that we've come accustomed to. And that's that stability provider. It's the anchor, you know, that really grounds your investment strategy.
Yeah, and cash is a good place to be, too. If you can get 4 to 5% on your cash, then you can get a little more stability even than we've had with bonds. But I want to come back to that earnings point you were making before. Just think back to 2020, you know, how bad earnings were and how well the stock market ended up doing after, you know, declining 30%. Forget what we ended up for the year. But the earnings weren't there. But it was the anticipation. And I'm reading something here, unless I'm reading this wrong, a 12% forecast for 2024. Can you expand upon that a little bit? That's fantastic.
Yeah, now keep in mind, Art, that when you have two quarters in 2023 where earnings decline, the comparison point year over year gets easier because you're comparing to a number that was in decline, not a number that was already growing. And so some of the question is, what are we comparing it to? Are we comparing it to the prior year where numbers were a little higher and things look a little better? No, we're comparing it to a year in which we'd already started to see some decline. And so the current forecast for next year is 12%. I expect that backs off a little between now and, you know, maybe September, October, when we start to lock in a more precise number. Right now, we have a full year forecast. We'll get kind of quarter by quarter forecast for next year later in the year. And that's when you really start to get some granularity on that. But, you know, I think the keys are expectations on continued infrastructure spending, expectations on some of the build out that's happening with some of the manufacturing. And most importantly, some of the earnings decline we've seen is businesses that had overhired or had been spending more money on things that, in an environment in which they're more conscious of their balance sheets, more conscious of spending, we've seen a number of technology companies right-sizing, the word they're using. It's a fancy word for layoffs. But if efficiency becomes more important, all of a sudden, margins start to improve again. All of a sudden, bottom line starts to matter again. That paints a picture, I think, of a market that should reasonably be expecting a reacceleration of growth once we get past some of the immediate concerns. You know, I think one of those immediate concerns, Art, is obviously the debt ceiling. I saw a report this week that perhaps we're going to hit that limit a little sooner than what we'd been talking about earlier. It's such an unknown from an outcome perspective, right? Because it's one of those things that we have very little control over, near term. Long term, certainly the way we vote, the way we kind of inform our politicians on what issues we care about, that has some say over those types of conversations. But, you know, in this particular crisis and this particular issue, it feels like that's going to be the one that hangs out there until we get some resolution. And at least for now, there's not much to indicate that it's high on the list of priorities to get done tomorrow. I'm sure, Art, you get a ton of questions from clients about this. How are you kind of navigating the concerns that clients have? How are you talking to them about their concerns regarding the debt ceiling?
Yeah, I think the concerns are legitimate. I was here in 2011, the last time we had pretty close to a breach of the debt ceiling. We don't want to see that happen again. The market dropped 19%, is my recollection, during the course of that year. Didn't end down 20, so we didn't have a bear market. But it was a matter of significant concern then. The market's not acting concerned. We're still up 8% on the S&P and 15% on the NASDAQ. The Dow, so it's lagging. So I am cautioning them. It could happen, but the politicians, despite the way they're trying to get attention, let's say both sides, despite the fact that they're grandstanding, despite the fact that they're holding us all hostage, despite the fact that there's an old adage on Wall Street that says sell in May and go away, and we don't act on that type of a, Wall Street adage. So I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that we could have more volatility if there is too much brinkmanship, but we don't control that. We have to keep, lengthening our horizons and realize we'll get through it, because I don't think these people are stupid enough, to bankrupt the country for the most part.
No, I think that's good advice, understanding that, the short-term concerns are always going to be out there. We have to be wise enough to focus on the long-term opportunity and trust that, especially now, we're getting paid more to hold some of that safe stuff that helps us navigate the risk. Well, with that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.